This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about year-end tax tips for your 2016 income tax return. My guest is David Hellman, a specialist in taxation law and also in estate planning, trust, and probate law. He's certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His law office is in San Rafael. Funding for this segment is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies 11 fields of law. Additional funding for the program is provided by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. It's also, everybody, we're doing this program, by the way, live on November 16th, and we're doing a call, what we might call is a CPA night. And I've got a couple of people here who would love to talk with you if you want to talk with them off the air. In cooperation with the California Society of CPAs San Francisco chapter, Frank Adam, who is a tax attorney and a CPA, and Mona Arnzen, who's an IRS authorized enroll agent, are here to talk with you off the air from now until 8 o'clock. And that number is 1-800-525-9917 for your questions, 1-800-525-9917. And in a few minutes, I'll give you our toll-free number so that you can call in and speak with my guest. David, great to have you back.
Glad to be here.
Well, I guess we better start getting organized, unfortunately, for the 2016 tax return, huh?
Right. The year's gone very quickly, and you need to have your data together to start planning. I mean, if there's some year-end strategies you'd want to get into, then you need to know where you actually stand right now.
How do you feel about people doing their own taxes at this point?
Well, it
generally
depends.
Speaking.
I mean, if it's a simple return and you can use a computer software to do it, then that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
More complex items, it's difficult. You need to really understand what you're doing, because even though a lot of the software will guide you through where to put things, if you don't really know how to categorize something, then it's really garbage in, garbage out mm-hmm. for tax purposes. So you really need to understand what it is you're doing, and if you can, you might be able to get through it. I have some clients that have me review what they've done.
Mm-hmm.
Others that I just do returns for. Some of them just throw up their hands and say, it's way too complicated. You just do it.
Well, I think that makes sense for people who certainly can't afford to have their own, either their CPA or their tax attorney do this.
Correct.
Really, rather than struggle and maybe make mistakes and then have a problem down the road.
That makes sense.
It would seem to me. What are some of the things you'd like to alert us to that are going on right now that you feel are important that people hear about?
Okay, well, today the Internal Revenue Service issued some tax tip for the year, and they've put it out in a couple other publications, but they're basically concerned about online threats. So the basic summary of the points that they're trying to get across is that you should use security software that can protect your computer and your data from threats imposed by malicious programs that can come that you don't know. You may open something that has something buried in it that then infects your computer.
When you say a threat, is this something, if you don't pay this or that, we're going to send you to jail, or what is
no,
it?
No, it's a software threat. It's that's embedded in an email that you may get. You may open it, and then you may have your computer get infected.
Oh, my.
So that's something they're warning people, that you should have security software to help mm-hmm. take care of those potential problems. If you have very sensitive data, they are recommending that you use encryption software just to protect things so that people won't be able to see it that easily, and they would have to know what the encryption is to basically mm-hmm. undo the...
What does that mean for those of us who are not so adept at what encryption means? What does that mean?
Well, they take the code. If you have a number 123, they take and through the software encrypt it so that it doesn't come out and just look like 123. It's a different format.
I see.
So that you can't really tell what the number is.
Who does this for you if someone wants to do their own?
Well, they have software that you can buy that will do that.
Okay. All right.
The third recommendation the Internal Revenue Service made is use strong passwords. So don't just use 123. Like a lot of people do for their computers to get into the basic computer. They suggest you use 10 or more digits, can include letters, numbers, characters.
So it's all mixed up.
All mixed up.
So it's not in sequence that can easily be kind of figured out.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
They say also to avoid phishing emails. So if you get email from something you don't recognize, just delete it. Don't bother to look at it because that could be a potential problem area. They also suggest that you back up your data periodically that you keep on your return in case one of these emails does bring something that wipes out whatever information you've stored so that you don't have to try and go back. In other words, put it on a separate disk or store it someplace where any problem with the storage is not going to create a problem for you getting the data back. And the final one is to protect your wireless network. So if you use a wireless network and it has a very broad range, then people standing out in the street might be able to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
So they're suggesting you be very careful about that.
Now, you got this information today. This came on your computer from the IRS?
Yes, it did.
And how, if someone wanted to look at this, because you've got several pages here, is there a particular website that they might use to get to it?
Yes. If you go to irs.gov
and
you look for tax tips, and this happens to be tax tip number one, and it is dated November 16th.
Oh, really?
2016, so it came out this morning.
I see.
And so that's something where you can read in a little more detail
what I was
just telling you about.
That's very good. You had mentioned, and this was, I thought, really quite remarkable, when we were preparing just a few minutes ago to go on the air, you mentioned something about the IRS being very concerned about, and I'm using maybe not the correct terminology, but phony requests for refunds of taxes, and it was something like $30 to $50 million that was done. Could you
talk
about that for a moment?
Right. There are people illegally filing false tax returns. They get a person's Social Security number and name, then they put in a false address for a refund.
Oh my.
They create maybe a W-2 that's not accurate and a big amount of withholding tax. Then they have a return. They prepare a return that will show a refund, big refund. Mm-hmm. They file the return, and then they get the refund, and the taxpayer then ends up having a difficulty with the IRS. They file their regular return, and the government's going to come back and say, we already filed a return.
Oh, my.
And if you overstated it, they may try and collect some money from you for what the refund was, the phony refund. So the government understands that this is a problem. So they're doing more and more, and that's why these security alerts came out, and they're doing various things to try to protect themselves, because last year the problem was in the $30 to $50 million range of false refunds.
That the IRS had paid to these scammers.
Right. And so they're trying to come up with procedures to block that.
David, if someone is a legitimate taxpayer, has been scammed like what you're talking about, someone else has used their Social Security number, phony W-2, et cetera, who should they, if the IRS says, well, you've already filed your return, you know, you're not entitled to anything further, who should the legitimate taxpayer complain to?
Go back to the IRS.
You go back to the IRS.
And the state tax agency, if it's also for the state.
Oh, my.
And the IRS
not just the local police department or the sheriff's office.
Well, you can report it, but basically you go to the IRS and they'll help you fix it.
Good. Okay.
And they will give you a PIN number, personal identification number, to use in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So anything in the future when you file a tax return, you use the PIN.
Yeah.
So that's
a further security measure.
It's a further security measure, and it also, your return is your Social Security number, name, or flagged, and so that anything you file has to have the PIN with it.
I see. That's good to know.
Right.
That's very good to know. You had told me that there's something about if people are not using a Social Security number, but they have a taxpayer ID number.
Right.
There's an issue now where they may need to get a new one. Would you talk about that briefly?
Right. If you have what's called an individual taxpayer identification number, and if it was either issued before 2013 or you haven't used it in 13, 14, or 15, then you need to apply for a new one. And this is, again, part of the security issues. They're making this a much tighter process. And it's going to take some time to get this. So you file a form. It's a W-7. The IRS is saying that if you file it now, it probably would take about 7 weeks to process. If you wait later, then it's 9 to 11 weeks. And you're going to need this number because it's like a Social Security number for people that don't have them and qualify for them. And so if you're going to be filing in January and hope to get a refund, then you're going to need to have a correct ITIN.
There are some people then that look to filing a tax return in January as opposed to April 15th or whatever the appropriate date is?
If you have all your data, well, first of all, the IRS doesn't start accepting returns on January 1st. They have to get their software geared up, and normally it's somewhere between the middle to the third week of January before they're geared up to accept returns. They will then make an announcement. Mm-hmm. And these are those returns are the basic simple ones. The more sophisticated ones, they put off even accepting them until February some point.
I would think so.
Right.
I would think so.
And then, of course, you've got the software manufacturers who also have to get their systems geared up so that they can give you the software to file the returns.
Let's pause for just a moment here. I want to let you know, everybody, that this is our call a enrolled agent or call a CPA. We're doing this program live on Wednesday, November 16th, and in cooperation with the California Society of CPAs, we're doing this. My guests are Mona Arzen, an IRS-authorized enrolled agent, and also Frank Adam, a tax attorney and CPA. If you'd like to talk with them off the air, they'll be here until 8 o'clock. 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. This is a public service that they are performing, no obligation on your part. In a few minutes, we'll be taking your calls on the air for David Hellman. The number, the toll-free number for David and me is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you want to call in a few minutes and talk with David Hellman and myself on the air. Also, I want to let you know that a free podcast of the full hour of Your Legal Rights is available at www.kalw.org/RSS. And that's www.kalw.org/RSS. David, estimated taxes for 2016, what should be we be concerned about, if anything, about that?
Well, if you are self-employed or have a lot of interest or dividend income or some other like rental income where you don't have withholding tax coming out, you have an obligation to file quarterly estimated tax returns.
Mm-hmm.
And the final one for this year is due January 15th of next year. So the
final one for 2016 is due by January 15th?
15th of 2017.
I see. Okay.
So what you need there is, and if you underpay your estimate, then you're subject to penalty. And it's the equivalent of interest at about a 4% rate.
I see.
But nonetheless, to avoid the penalties, you want to pay in what you can. Now, there are different ways of calculating what you need to pay in, but if you've calculated it and you've been low on the estimates for the prior quarters, one way of overcoming that and avoiding some underestimate penalties for the earlier quarters is if you can have some extra withholding tax taken out of salary if you happen to get W-2 income besides the self-employment
income. That's if you're employed by somebody else.
If you're employed by somebody with a W-2, you can ask them to take out extra withholding tax, and that extra money taken out is treated as if it's been paid throughout the whole year.
I see.
So, for instance, you could have one paycheck during the whole year on December 31st, have your withholding tax taken out at that point, and it's treated as if you've had it paid equally during the whole year.
Even though there is some rule that you pay it quarterly.
Right.
So what if you're self-employed? And
then what you want to do is to get an accurate as possible calculation of what is due and get that paid in by January 15th.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What about if someone has an IRA and they've had a distribution during this year? What do they have to be concerned about?
Well, that's also income that's generally not have withholding tax taken out of it, although you can have withholding tax taken out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, if you are going to take a distribution before the end of the year because you have to as a required minimum distribution.
If you're of an age of what?
Of an age. If 70
and a half.
Yeah. Right, okay. 70 and a half, you then need to start.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also, the withholding that's taken on the IRA distributions is also treated the same as that W-2 withholding. It's deemed to be spread out through the entire year.
I see. There's something about, that you mentioned to me before we went on the air, that IRA money can be used for charitable contributions. What's that
right.
all about?
If you're 70 and a half, you can have your IRA custodian take some of your money and pay it to a charity on your behalf. And this counts against the required minimum distribution. The maximum amount is $100,000. And the advantage of that is that it reduces your adjusted gross income for areas where that amount is relevant in terms of determining deductions or underestimate of your taxes. And that particularly happens in the itemized deductions for medical, where there is generally either a 10%, it's going to be 10% for everybody now coming up, of your adjusted gross is deducted from your total medical deductions before you get to use the balance as an itemized deduction.
When you say 10% now, as opposed to what?
It was 7.5%.
That's what I remember. So as of 2016, it's now 10%?
Well, it is still going to be 7.5% for seniors, but it's 10% for everybody else and has been for a few years.
I see.
Seniors are going into the 10% category, I believe, in 2017.
I see.
I mean, subject to whatever Congress does under President Trump when revising the tax code, but we'll see where all that goes.
Yeah, we will see, won't we?
We will see.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Major changes, probably. But so that... by reducing that amount, then you get more deductions.
I see.
And it's the same with miscellaneous itemized deductions where they take 2% of your adjusted gross income. Mm-hmm. So if you have you're looking for a job and you take those deductions, or you have some kind of work expenses that you're not reimbursed for by your employer, that's where those also go. So there's different kinds of miscellaneous itemized deductions that 2% is deducted from.
That's very, very interesting, frankly. This is a complicated area. At one point, I did my own taxes, but I have not for many years. And frankly, I feel a lot easier about it by not doing it myself.
Well, it is important. If you feel, you know, if you feel comfortable doing it and it's not complicated, then you can do it yourself.
Yeah.
But if it is complicated, and then you're better off to have help.
For those of us who own homes, and obviously there's property tax, certainly in California, there are as I'm presuming throughout the state, there are two installments of the property tax, one that is due by December 1st, another one is due by April 1st or whatever it is in the following year.
Right.
And I'm presuming that that's probably followed, since we are up on the NPR satellite going to other stations in the United States, just a few at least so far. I would assume that other states have similar types of situations. But let me ask you this. I have recently received my property tax statement. But there are two statements. I should pay the first on December 1st, should pay the next one by April 1st. If I decide that I want to pay both of those payments this year before the end of December 31st, what are the consequences, generally speaking?
Well, generally, you would then get the extra deduction, and it would help reduce your taxes. But if you are in the alternate minimum tax brackets, then one of the things that alternate minimum tax adds back to your regular income are taxes paid, and that includes property taxes as well as state income tax withheld. So then you lose the benefit of those deductions. So having prepaid that tax then would not give you a tax benefit.
Can you give us a simple little example? Because I find this rather complicated.
All right. if you're not, let's just say that the extra tax, property tax you pay is $2,000.
Yeah, let's say that one payment, one installment is $2,000, the second one is $2,000.
Okay. Right, so you pay all four by December.
Yeah.
You would then normally, if you itemize your deductions, get a $4,000 itemized deduction
yes.
for that payment.
Yes, which goes against your adjusted gross income, is that right?
Right, to determine the taxable income.
All right.
But if you fall into the alternate minimum tax structure, which is a whole separate calculation, they start with your taxable income, they add back your exemptions, they add back the taxes that are paid that were itemized, they add back the miscellaneous itemized deductions that were paid, and then if you have certain kinds of accelerated depreciation and certain types of oil and gas royalties that where you've been taking percentage depletion, and there's a whole series of different things that get added back that may be on your regular tax. They then calculate the alternate minimum tax, and if that amount comes out higher than your regular tax, you pay the alternate minimum tax.
I see.
And in so doing, you eliminate the benefit
I see.
Of having paid that extra amount for property taxes.
It seems to me this is complicated enough if someone has some, let's say, that one's guts are telling you, I'm not sure I know what I'm doing. It seems to me you really need the help of a specialist, whether it's a CPA or a tax attorney, et cetera.
Good idea.
Yeah. let me just let you all know, in case you didn't know this, this program is live in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's live on the internet at www.klw.org for the full hour. We're also uplifted to the NPR satellite for national distribution. And if you're interested in the full program, because the first half hour we record and we send it out to a number of stations in California, actually 15 that air the half hour next week. But if you are interested in listening to the entire program of my guest David Hellman, there's a free podcast that you can get, and it's available at www.klw.org/RSS. That's www.klw.org/RSS. And it may be helpful to you in if you really want to bone up as best you can and see how dangerous it may be to do your own taxes, you may want to listen to this program again. Someone in the first remaining few minutes of the statewide version, which is the half-hour program, if someone is doing business out of their home, let's say it's an Uber driver who's, let's say, not necessarily yet an employee of an employer and is not getting a W-2. I know there's some issues on this at this point. Or someone who's setting up a part-time business using their home. What are some of the issues that someone who is using their home as a basis for doing some kind of work, whether it's their full-time work or whether it's a part-time job or whatever it is?
Well, if they take the part of their home and they use it exclusively for the business, then they can deduct the expenses related to that part of the home.
Mm-hmm.
They can even depreciate part of the house if they want to do that, although that does have a tax consequence if
they sell a house. Then you have a greater
taken depreciation.
Yeah.
But so those expenses would include, and you normally would take the square footage of the space that's used for business, which may be part of your garage also, if you're storing things. But whatever is used exclusively for the business, you take that square footage, compare it to the total that you have, total square footage, and you come up with a percentage. And then you can take that percentage of the interest that you may pay on the mortgage, on the property taxes, the insurance on the house, the repairs and maintenance to the house, all those kind of expenses you can take a percentage of.
With regard to the mortgage payment, I mean, a certain part of it is, of course, interest, but another part is actually a
principal payment.
The principal.
Right.
Is that something also that is taken?
No, just the interest.
Just the interest. Okay. Well, Nanette, What if someone is obviously in their business using their own vehicle? I mean, obviously, I think, what is it, 57.7 cents per mile that you can put on your tax return? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a little less than that at this point. But yes, you can use your, if you're the Uber driver or you're just in a business where you have to drive to see customers or clients, then if you keep, you should keep a log of the mileage, and then you get to deduct either the greater of the number of miles by the IRS allowance, which changes from year to year, or the actual expenses of the vehicle for the percentage that you're using it for business.
How difficult is it, or what are the odds of someone being audited?
Well, it depends. Overall, about 1% of the taxpayers are audited, but it depends on whether you have particular kinds of income. If you have a loss on a Schedule C, that's a red flag. If you have a lot of income flowing through your return, that's a red flag. But on the average, it's about 1% of taxpayers are audited.
Throughout the country.
Throughout the country.
What about the personal tax credits? Are people have you found in your practice that people have overlooked the rules, the IRS rules about personal tax credits, such as the child tax credit or the something called the Savers credit? There's a dependent care credit. Could you talk just briefly about that?
Well, if you if you use a tax professional or if you do the return yourself with a computer that has appropriate tax software, those are systems are all geared to find those credits and to use them.
I see.
But if you try and do your return on your own by hand, then you better read up on those particular items and see if you qualify and try and plug it into your return.
Yeah, okay.
Very difficult.
It sounds difficult.
Well, and the IRS is finding that even people that file their own returns, about 75% are using computer software.
Really?
Right.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
So at least the mathematical mistakes are not going to be there. And then it's
here's something to end this half hour, the statewide version. This has been brought into the studio here. Donald Trump says he'll eliminate the federal estate tax and the alternative minimum tax. Also, he's promised big tax cuts, which will primarily benefit the wealthy. Aren't all of these tax cuts going to create huge deficits? Do you have a comment on this, David?
Well, the experience that we have had with what's called trickle-down economics in the past has not worked.
Yeah.
So chances are, yes, it will probably create big deficits that we will have to deal with in the future.
What would be the point, then, of doing this?
Benefit those people that have to pay those taxes now.
Isn't that wonderful? Well, do we really want to do that, though? We as the people really want to do this? Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see really what happens in the near future.
There are some conservative members of Congress that do not want to do anything to increase the deficit, despite the fact that that Donald Trump may be of their own political party, they may not agree to go along with that. So we will see where this all ends out. It's not a for certain.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, and I hope they play tough and not give in. All right. We are doing this program live on Wednesday, November 16th of 2016. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program on year-end tax tips for your 2016 income tax return. This is your opportunity if you'd like to call in and be on the air with my guest, David Hellman. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And we are also doing an opportunity for you to talk with a couple of people off the air. And they are Mona Arnson, who is an IRS authorized enrolled agent, and Frank Adam, who's a tax attorney and CPA, who are here at the station to talk with you off the air. No obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service they're performing. They'll be here till 8 o'clock Pacific time. That number is 1-800-525-9917. Pardon me, 1-800-525-9917. And they are both here Very experienced people in the area of income tax. So if you have any questions or comments or concerns, feel free to give them a call, 1-800-525-9917. If you'd like to pose a question or comment or speak with David Hellman, the number is, and this is a toll-free number, 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. My guest is David Hellman, a specialist in taxation law. He's also a specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law. Are you still a CPA?
Yes.
You are, and he's also a CPA. He's a certified specialist in taxation law and estate planning by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His office is in San Rafael. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149. That's 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to line you up with an attorney for a half an hour consultation. And with minor exception, for a half an hour consultation throughout California, the charge will be something like $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that going. It's a great service to give you some basic information. One more announcement I have for those of you in the San Francisco Bay Area. The San Mateo County Law Library is having a noontime lecture. That's tomorrow, Thursday, November 17th, starting at noon, and it's entitled Post-Death Administration: Basics of Handling Affairs When a Loved One Passes. Is presented by attorney, Alma Songi Beck, who's a certified specialist in estate planning, trust, and probate law by the California Board of Legal Specialization. The lecture is free. You can bring your sack lunch to the library, the San Mateo County Law Library. Again, that's tomorrow, Thursday, November 17th, from noon to 1. The library is located at 710 Hamilton Street, in Redwood City, and if you want more information, it's 650-363-4913, 650-363-4913. We're going to start now with Rita of San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Hi.
Hi. First of all, I'd just like to say I enjoy listening to your program.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Rita.
My sister and I are going on a trip around the world, basically, and
don't make us drool over that, will you?
Well, we're older than dirt, so it's, you know, maybe we'll be away from whatever happens with Mr. Trump. But anyway, and we're leaving on January the 20th, and my sister, who lives in Arizona, does our taxes, and she's way brighter than I am. But she asked me to ask you if it's possible to file an extension for the 2016 taxes by January the 15th when we will be leaving.
If you're going to be out of the country,
yes,
on April 15th, then you can request an extension as early as possible. I mean, they will accept it. It's a little unusual. You're probably going to need to mail it in because I don't think that the IRS will be in a position to electronically accept it at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. You also should be paying in anything you think you're going to owe.
Yeah.
But people that are abroad on April 15th actually have until June 15th to file.
Oh, really?
And then you can get an extra extension beyond that if you need it. So
okay,
you need to have your travel schedule in mind.
Oh, all right. Well, thank you. I know that my sister does it all early because of all the situations that you mentioned earlier in the show about people using your number, Social Security number, and another address. So she very organized and very good at
Well, sure, and, yeah. and if you get the extension in, then the government will know that you filed and you're not intending to file
okay,
for a while.
But so we just didn't know if you could do it that early. She didn't know if you could do it that early.
Thank you so much. I've never seen a restriction on filing it that early.
Okay.
They may question why, but you're entitled to an automatic extension.
When do you guys get back, Rita?
May 11th, I think.
Boy, it sounds like a nice trip.
It will be. I'm sure it will be.
Well, have a good time.
And the roof doesn't rise. Thing, whatever that thing is. But thank you again. We both truly appreciate it.
Very pleased you called in. Have a wonderful trip with your sister.
Thank you so very much.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Take care now. Again, we're doing this program on Wednesday, November 16th. We are doing a year-end tax tips program. If you'd like to talk with David Hellman, our toll-free number is 866-798-8255. We're also in cooperation with the California Society of CPAs. The San Francisco chapter has been very much involved with my program over the years. This is the first time we have done this at this time of the year. We usually do it like in January. But I felt that those of you who may be conscientious enough might have some tax questions, and I thought since David was going to be here, we have done our year-end tax tips program now for several years, David and I, about this time of the year. I thought you might like to have a chance to talk with tax preparers off the air. So Frank Adam, who's a tax attorney and CPA, and Mona Arnzen, who's an IRS-authorized enrolled agent, are here at the station. That number, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917, and they'll be here till 8 o'clock, so take advantage of it. And all right, we have got Robert. Robert, welcome to the program. Hi. Oh, my.
Hi.
Yeah. Well, oh, dear.
Can you hear me?
We have an echo, Robert, and I'm not sure why, but go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Try now. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a 501c3 and a 509c3. It's a nonprofit vocational education, and things are going to change this year. How do we deal with the taxes on this thing now? Historically, I would just have an enrolled agent do them for me, but things are going to change and my business is changing. So I just try to get ahead of the game here so I have some foundation to lay out to see if I can do it right this year.
Well, your 2016 tax preparation should not be any different than 2015. Your business, what you've been doing as a business, may be different and may require some different approach in how it's reported. But we don't know where things are going to be for 2017, so it's really too early to try and plan for how to what's going to be required, what kind of changes they're going to make to the law. My guess is that they're probably not going to be substantial changes for nonprofits, because they're really just focused on individuals and corporations at this point for changing tax brackets, lowering them, eliminating the estate tax and maybe the alternate minimum tax, we'll see. But I think that for purposes of what you're doing, I would assume that it's the process is going to be pretty much the same.
You do not, Robert, you do not have a tax preparer helping you on this?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do?
He's
okay.
EA. But I just keep it simple.
You just try to keep it simple. Well, let's hope it is simple. So does that help you, what my guest David Hellman had to tell you?
Certainly does, and I want to thank you very much.
Hey, thanks very much for calling. Take care. By the way, everybody, again, if you'd like to speak with David Hellman, we're doing this program live on Wednesday evening, November 16th. That toll-free number, 866-798-8255. If you'd like to speak with the two tax people who are here off the air, Mona Arnzen, an IRS authorized enrolled agent, and Frank Adam, a tax attorney and CPA. They're here until 8 o'clock Pacific time. That's 1-800-525-9917. You're welcome to call in. Just don't wait too long, because right now it's about 20 minutes of 8 Pacific time. We have now, let's see, we've got somebody else who wants to talk with you, David, and that is Carla. Carla, welcome to the program.
Hi. Good evening to all of you. I heard something recently, and I don't know how I missed this announcement, about there's something that's changed with contributing to your IRAs, that I have Roth IRAs pretty much,
mm-hmm.
and somebody said that I won't be able to contribute to them as I have in the past. What's going on with that?
Well, there is a limit on how much income you can have and make a contribution to a Roth IRA. But if otherwise, if you're within the, if your income is below that bracket, you can.
What is the what is the bracket?
It's about $100,000.
$100,000.
No problem.
sorry, Carla.
Yeah, so am I.
I mean, there's also you can, if you have money in an IRA, you can convert it over to a Roth IRA, mm-hmm. but you will have to pay the income tax on that IRA amount.
But I only have Roth IRAs. Right.
Okay. So generally, that rule has not changed from prior years.
Oh, okay. So it only really matters if you make $100,000.
It's about that number, yes. Oh. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's in that range.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's
okay,
great.
Okay, Carla, thank you so much. Thank you very much for calling. Would you explain this, as you were just mentioning to Carla, if you have money invested in an IRA and you want to transfer it or put it into a Roth, what are the consequences there?
All right. Well, the withdrawal, taking it out of the IRA, is a taxable event. So you pay tax on that withdrawal. And then,
so in other words, an IRA, when you're investing in an IRA, this is...
Well, you get a tax deduction for putting the money in.
Okay.
So when you pull it out, you pay the tax on it.
Okay.
Gotcha.
Roth. Yeah, because your payment into an IRA, you are actually deducting that from your gross, so you're not paying taxes on that transfer from the gross income you're making that you're putting into your IRA. Am I right on that?
Yes, you're correct.
Okay, I gotcha.
But a Roth, the contributions to the Roth are not tax deductible.
I see.
So you put the money in, you don't get a tax deduction, and if you have a Roth account for 5 years at least, and then you start pulling it out, then it's coming out tax-free as well as the earnings.
So if, for example, let's say just for simple money here. Your adjusted gross income is $50,000 for a year. If you put into a Roth, let's say $5,000, now what's the consequence there?
There's no income tax consequence.
None whatsoever.
None whatsoever, because you're not pulling it out of any taxable source, and you're not getting a deduction for putting the money in.
I see. So if when, however, 5 years down the road or whatever it may be, you decide you want to withdraw the money from the Roth, what's the consequence there?
Again, no tax consequence.
Really?
Right. I mean, you end up reporting it on your return. All these things can be reported, but there's no tax consequence for it.
Well, why would anyone then want to invest money in an IRA as opposed to a Roth?
Well, if you want the tax deduction.
Oh, I see.
You know.
I see. Well, that's very interesting. Okay. Well, people are quiet. I don't know whether you've lulled them all to sleep or what. We're not trying to do that, folks. So if you have questions about taxes, you have problems about taxes, you have something that you would like to share with us and all of us, all of the listeners who are listening to you, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. If you would like to speak to my other guests who are here at the station, KLW in San Francisco, and they are Mona Arnzen. She is an IRS authorized enrolled agent, and Frank Adam, a tax attorney and CPA, both very experienced people in taxes. They are here to speak with you. No obligation on your part whatsoever. This is a public service that they are performing. Frank has done this a number of times. Mona is a very experienced enrolled agent. She happens to be my tax agent. And here's the phone number, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. They'll be here until 8 o'clock Pacific time. Don't wait another too many more minutes because we're then done. So, all right, we have a couple more people who want to talk to you about this. Let me also, because I think that this is a very important thing that we're trying to do, to give you some alerting in terms of preparation of your materials for the 2016 return. If for some reason you have missed part of the program or you want to hear it again, we have a free podcast of the full hour of Your Legal Rights, and it's available at, if you want to jot this down or remember this, if you don't have something to write it down with, www.kalw.org/RSS. www.kalw.org/RSS. And you can then listen to the entire program at your leisure. And if you feel that you have difficulty sleeping at night, put it on, and that'll help you go to sleep.
Right. You're for insomnia.
Very good for insomnia. So we're going to have someone else talk with my guest, David Hellman, specialist in taxation law. He's a CPA, and his office is in San Rafael. He's a specialist certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. And Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, I just have a question about, I'm 67, and I just wanted to know if it's worthwhile for me to invest in IRAs now.
You're 67 years old?
Yes.
And you wonder, should you invest in an IRA at this point?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Well, if you have earned income, you're not covered by a pension plan, then you can make a contribution, and it depends on the level of your income.
So, in other words, if he is still working,
right,
and making earned income, as opposed to, let's say, having a pension, for example.
Right, or just dividends and interest income or rental income.
Some other kind of income
that's not earned income.
Yeah.
So you are working?
Yes.
Okay. Are you covered by a pension plan?
No.
Okay. So you could make the contribution. It will reduce your adjusted gross income, and it will save you some tax.
Okay. So income level of about $50,000, which kind of IRA would be more beneficial?
Well, the IRA gives you an immediate tax deduction. Putting a contribution into a Roth does not, but it does accumulate in there tax-free. So if one of the other advantages of the Roth is that you do not have to start drawing it at 70 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just keep putting money, you know, if you have earned income, you can keep putting money in it. So you really need to look at what your own long-term plans are.
Steve, you're saying how much do you gross a year? Did you say?
$50,000.
How much?
$50,000.
Do you not have a tax preparer? Do your income tax return?
Yes.
You do have one?
Yeah, H&R Block.
Well, I'll tell you what. My suggestion is so that you educate yourself as best you can. I really think you should bring this to the attention of your tax preparer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, face to face, we can only do so much on this radio program, and educate yourself about that so that you know what you're doing. It makes you feel comfortable.
Right. You could ask them, you know, if I don't make an IRA contribution, what's the tax consequence? If I do, how much tax am I going to save by doing it? Then you'll have the number, and you can see whether it's worth doing for your purposes.
So that's your assignment, Steve.
Okay, well, thank you for the assignment.
And you got to do it.
Right, thank you.
All right, take care. Thank you very much for calling. All right, again, we have a few minutes left on the program, Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. My guest is David Hellman, a specialist in taxation law, a CPA, and his office is in San Rafael. Toll-free number, 866-798-8255. We have a couple of people down in the conference room at KLW, Frank Adam, who's a tax attorney and CPA, and Mona Arnzen, an IRS authorized enrolled agent, who are here to talk with you off the air if you'd prefer that. That number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And we have Alyssa. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
I have, I think, an easy question about a W-4.
Don't give me this stuff about an easy question. I've heard that before, but go ahead. Go ahead.
I, having always been single, I've always filed single in zero, which I like because I think it takes out a lot of money during the year, and then I get some back. And I, in 2016, I got married, and I'm wondering, can I still stay single and zero on my W-4, or do you have to change?
Now, let me ask David this. A W-4, David, is what?
All right, it's a withholding certificate that goes to the employer, and it tells them how much and what category you want to have withheld.
I see.
And yes, you can stay as single and zero if you want, even though you're married.
Okay. What do you think? Do people, is there like a general rule of thumb that people use about whether to change or...
Well, it depends on your spouse and whether or not the spouse is having adequate withholding, because if you're going to file a joint return, you want to make sure that you've got enough withholding for both of you.
Okay.
And so single and zero is a way mm-hmm. of doing that. If, for instance, either of you has a lot of interest in dividends or rental property income or something that is not subject to withholding tax, then you normally are going to need something extra taken out anyway just to cover the extra income.
Okay.
So putting it all together and projecting it, single and zero may work well.
Okay. All right. Well, that's very helpful. Thanks so much.
Alyssa, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Very glad you called. Take care. Bye-bye. Jerry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
You are on the air.
I have a question about insurance. I'm a trustee of my brother's trust. Mm-hmm. And his parents came up with two insurance policies for him back in the 40s.
Wow.
We've been paying premiums on them. And
these are life insurance.
Yeah, life insurance. So Anyway, what happened was the benefit is $25,000, and so far the premiums have been $28,000. He's 70. He's going to live another 15 years. By this time, so I said, I want to surrender the policy, and I'm taking $15,000 as a payoff, okay? It's a $25,000 policy, but they're paying me for past, they're returning, I guess, my premiums is what they're doing, right?
But you're saying that would only be $15,000?
It's going to be $15,000, which not only, that's pretty nice money, really, because he's locked into this thing forever.
Oh, I see. I see.
He's only 70. His life expectancy is about 18 years. $200 a year, another $36,000.
Oh.
So anyway, that's not my question. I know what I want to do. In fact, I've done it. I've sent the policy in. But then they said to me, you're going to have to find out about the taxes on this. What is the story on surrendered insurance policy money?
All right. Well, basically, what you've got is several different things going on. One, you've paid in this money every, or your brother has paid in this money
Correct.
Every year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a total, one total.
Right.
There is a cost of insurance. So that is the cost the insurance company figures for what you have paid in that is actually providing the insurance.
Okay.
And then...
They don't tell me what that is.
No, but they probably will issue a 1099 for part of this. Because then what you're getting back
Yes.
is... two different components. One is the difference between what you have paid in and the cost of insurance. So that's one number. That should be not taxable. But then anything above that amount is probably going to be earnings on the policy, and that part probably will be taxable.
Okay.
And that part you should get it. They will probably give you a 1099 for.
But what Jerry has said is that at this point, if I understood him correctly and heard him correctly, that about $28,000 has been paid in premiums on a policy that only will pay out
$25,000
in another 15 years or whatever.
Right. But there is a cost. So if he's paid in 28 mm-hmm. and he's getting back 15, then my assumption is that $13,000 is what they would call the cost of insurance.
Okay.
So that's what they are saying is what you paid every year towards having the benefit of insurance.
I follow that.
So then the issue is, all right, how much extra? So if you take this 13 off the 28, you're back to 15, and maybe none of that 15 is going to be taxable.
Yeah.
You need to see where it comes out with whether, I mean, they should be able to tell you now what the amount of interest or other income is going to be that's coming off that policy.
Maybe that will come out with some paperwork that comes with the check, I would hope.
Well, you might call them first, too.
Yeah,
no.
Don't wait for the check,
okay.
Jerry.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Call them. Take the initiative and call them and ask them to give you this information.
Right. They should be able to do that.
Yeah, they should be, and it's certainly, as I look at it, it's their responsibility to do it.
Well, yes. It's interesting because one of the first things you get when you call the number, and this is a company in Texas, I forget, Georgia International or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, you get a recording that they're not going to do anything relating to taxes. It's like when you call the, they're not in a fiduciary relationship here with me. They've told me to go talk to a tax guy about how to handle all this.
Well, that may be, but they should tell you how much they're going to issue you a 1099 for.
Sure, okay. Sure. Okay. They should do that.
That's good. Okay, that's it. Can I give one more?
Yeah, very briefly, if you would, Jerry. Yeah,
another
go ahead.
Insurance company. Changed. John Hancock used to be a certain kind of insurance company, and then they changed to become another one. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Right. They would go from to a mutual. They probably became a mutual company,
something
which means
like that.
That the policyholders own the company.
Anyway, what they did was they started paying dividends.
Right.
Now, I've got $5,000 in dividends. The question is, what is that as far as taxes? What line does that even go on?
Well, that's like dividends on a corporate stock.
Okay.
It's just like any other kind of dividends that you get.
So it's
taxable.
It's taxable.
It's taxable, but it's taxable the way it's going to go in Schedule B or whatever.
Right. It's going to go there, and and generally the insurance companies are all qualified dividends, so it is subject to the maximum of 15% rate for federal.
It's going to be a long-term thing, isn't it? But the dividends are paid every year.
Right. No, it's just dividends. So it's going to get treated as the same as long-term capital gains for federal, but that's a 15% tax bracket.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the help.
Jerry, okay. You be careful now. Make sure you do the right thing. But it sounds like you got a pretty good start on thinking about this. Glad you called. All right. We have about 30 seconds. What parting moments, what parting thoughts do you have? You've actually got 15 seconds.
Well, the IRS is also doing some other things to help protect security, and one of them is that if you're first time filing electronically, your return on your own, you're going to need to know some information off of your 2015 tax return, particularly the adjusted gross income, because that's another one of their tests to make sure you're the person who you are filing.
David, I want to thank you very much for joining us. It's always a pleasure to have you, and I hope you join us again in February or whatever it is when we get really serious about this stuff.
Right. Well, I enjoyed it.
My guest has been David Hillman, a specialist in taxation law, also in estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's also a CPA. His office is in San Rafael. David, thanks so much.
Glad to be here.
Next time on Your Legal Rights, we'll talk about divorced or divorcing parents of young children working together to make the holidays happy for their children, since next week is Thanksgiving, and then, of course, we're up to Christmas, etc. My guests will be California Board of Legal Specialization family law attorneys Janet Frankel and B.J. Fathom, National Board of Trial Advocacy family law Hawaii attorney Thomas Farrell, and Valerie Houghton, family law attorney and marriage family therapist. So I hope you join us for that. Your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McClain. This segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Additional funding has been provided by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program for national distribution. Thanks for joining us, and please join us next week or next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.